Good. We stopped with oriental incense, is that right then? Okay. Okay, then we go on now. Not for dummy.
What homothetic objects, other than the candlestick, stood on the mantelpiece? A timepiece of striated Connemara marble stopped at the hour of 4:46 a.m. on the 21st of March, 1896. Matrimonial gift of Matthew Dillon. A dwarf tree of glacial arborescence under a transparent bell shade, matrimonial gift of Luke and Caroline Doyle. An embalmed owl, matrimonial gift of Alderman John Hooper. What interchanges of looks took place between these three objects and Bloom? In the mirror of the gilt-bordered pierglass, the undecorated back of the dwarf tree regarded the upright back of the embalmed owl. Before the mirror, the matrimonial gift of Alderman John Hooper, with a clear, melancholy, wise, bright, motionless, compassionate gaze, regarded Bloom, while Bloom, with obscure, tranquil, profound, motionless, compassionated gaze, regarded the matrimonial gift of Luke and Caroline Doyle. What composite asymmetrical image in the mirror then attracted his attention? The image of a solitary, ipso-relative, mutable, alia-relative man. Why solitary, ipso-relative? Brothers and sisters had he none, yet that man's father was his grandfather's son. Why mutable, alia-relative? From infancy to maturity, he had resembled his maternal procreatrix. From maturity to senility, he would increasingly resemble his paternal creator. What final visual impression was communicated to him by the mirror? The optical reflection of several inverted volumes improperly arranged and not in the order of their common letters, with scintillating titles on the two bookshelves opposite.
Now, Bloom's interior, we get here. What homothetic object? Homothetic must mean put in the same place. Other than the candlestick stood on the mantelpiece, and so we have the interior. A timepiece of striated Connemara marble stopped at the hour of 4:46 a.m. of the 24th of 1896. So that 10 year hasn't been going. No one would say it stopped when you forget, but here we have the exact details. Matrimonial gift of Matthew Dillon. For the wedding was given that. A dwarf tree of glacial arborescence under a transparent bell shade. I think you know that kind of thing. Matrimonial gift of Luke and Caroline Doyle. And then an embalmed oil. Matrimonial gift of Alderman John Hooper. So you gave these things. The embalmed oil has always become a standard for this kind of thing. By the way, it may also be a side glance at Pallas Athena, the owl-eyed goddess. Then, what interchange of looks took place between these three objects and Bloom? Obviously, the objects don't look, but Bloom does. In the mirror of the gilt-bordered pierglass, the undecorated back of the dwarf tree regarded the upright back of the embalmed owl. Before the mirror, the matrimonial gift of Alderman Cooper, with a clear, melancholy, wise, bright, motionless, compassionate gaze, regarded Bloom. Obviously, the owl is equipped with compassion. While Bloom, with obscure, tranquil, profound, motionless, compassionate gaze, regarded the matrimonial gift of Luke and Caroline Doyle. Then, what composite asymmetrical image did the mirror then, in the mirror then, attract his attention? Here he sees himself, of course. The image of a solitary, ipso-relative, mutable, alio-relative man. And you see these scientific terms. By the way, Stephen was introduced in the morning in the first chapter of the interim monologue by looking into a mirror. And now we have Bloom at the end. Vaisoritri, ipsorelative in relation to himself, aliorelative in relation to somebody else. Vaisoritri, and that brings up obviously a rhyme, children's rhyme, brothers and sisters he had none, Bloom doesn't have them, yet that man's father was his grandfather's son. Then, why mutable, aliorelative, relating to something else. From infancy to maturity, he had resembled his maternal procreators. He resembled his mother. From maturity to senility, he would increasingly resemble his paternal creator. So he would look more and more like his father. What final visual impression was communicated to him by the mirror? The optical reflection of several inverted volumes, improperly arranged, and not in the order of their common letters, with scintillating titles on the two bookshelves opposite. And now then we get the list of Bloom's library.
Catalogue these books. Tom's Dublin Post Office Directory, 1886. Dennis Florence McCarthy's Poetical Works, Copper Beechleaf Bookmark, like page 5. Shakespeare's Works, Dark Crimson, Morocco, Gold Tooled. The Useful Ready Reckoner, Brown Cloth. The Secret History of the Court of Charles II, Red Cloth, Tooled Binding. The Child's Guide, Blue Cloth. When We Were Boys, by William O'Brien, MP. Green cloth, slightly faded, envelope bookmark at page 217. Thoughts from Spinoza, maroon leather. The Story of the Heavens by Sir Robert Ball, blue cloth. Ellis's Three Trips to Madagascar, brown cloth, title obliterated. The Stark Munro Letters by A. Conan Doyle, property of the City of Dublin Public Library, 106 Capel Street, lent the 21st of May, Whitsun Eve, 1904, due 4th of June, 1904. 13 days overdue. Black cloth binding bearing white letter number ticket. Voyages in China by Viator. Recovered with brown paper, red ink title. Philosophy of the Talmud, sewn pamphlet. Lockhart's Life of Napoleon. Cover wanting, marginal annotations, minimizing victories, aggrandizing defeats of the protagonist. Sol und Haben by Gustav Freytag. Blackboards, Gothic characters, cigarette coupon bookmark at page 24. Hozier's History of the Russo-Turkish War, brown cloth, two volumes with gummed label, Garrison Library, Governor's Parade, Gibraltar, on verso of cover. Lawrence Bloomfield in Ireland by William Allingham, second edition, green cloth, gilt trefoil design, previous owner's name on rector of flyleaf erased. A Handbook of Astronomy, cover brown leather detached. Five plates, antique letterpress, long primer, author's footnotes, nonpareil, marginal clues, brevier, captions, small pica. The Hidden Life of Christ, blackboards. In the Track of the Sun, yellow cloth, title page missing, recurrent title intestation. Physical Strength and How to Obtain It by Eugene Sandow, red cloth. Short but yet plain elements of geometry, written in French by F. Ignat Pardies and rendered into English by John Harris, D.D., London. Printed for R. Knaplock at the Bishop's Head, M.D., C.C., X.1, with dedicatory epistle to his worthy friend, Charles Cox, Esquire, Member of Parliament for the Borough of Southwark, and having ink calligraph statement on the flyleaf, certifying that the book was the property of Michael Gallagher, dated this 10th day of May, 1822, and requesting the person who should find it, if the book should be lost or go astray, to restore it to Michael Gallagher, Carpenter, Duffery Gate, Enniscorthy, County Wicklow, the finest place in the world.
Oh. I think most of us look, when we go into a foreign apartment, probably look at the, or give your glance at the books, because we may think it tells us something. Now, these are Bloom's books. Catalogue these books. This is here even an imperative. Somebody should catalogue them. I don't think Bloom looks at every title as we do. First, Tom's Dublin Post Office Directory 1886. We can show it to you here. We have one, and very proud to have one. This is the kind of address book. Now it would be the telephone book, and it's very precious. Then we have Dennis Warden McCarthy. That's an Irish writer, poetical works, and you can see the list is like the catalogue of a bookseller, all these indications. Copper Beasley Bookmark on page 5. By the way, in the foundation, and you can see we have a few, we try to get these books together, but it's not easy because many of them, like the next one, Shakespeare's work, have no bibliographical existence, so we don't know. I mean, we have Shakespeare's work, but not this edition. The Useful Ready Reckoner of Brown Cloth, we have that too, and that is merely a list, you know, the complicated British system with inches and pounds and shillings and all of that. This is merely a table that you can find out of there. So no, it's not a book anyone reads. Then The Secret History of the Court of Charles II, Red Cloth Tool Binding. That would be interesting to know. The Secret Court of Charles, these were somewhat notorious kings, and this is obviously a kind of spicy book, or poses as a spicy book. The Child's Guide, Blue Cloth. The next book is clear. When We Were Boys by William O'Brien, MP, and he was a parliamentary who sided with Parnell and then turned against him. And that we have green cloth, slightly faded envelope, bookmark at page 217. The bookmark we have opens a page whose running title is Lotus Eaters. So it is something slightly Homeric for us. The Thoughts from Spinoza, Maroon Leather, of course, that again, it cannot be determined. There must be many similar books, and we know that Joyce likes, says Spinoza. The Story of the Heavens by Sir Ball, Blue Cloth, that is a book he has and we have. It's a fairly big book. That's where Bloom's astronomy comes from. Then we have Ellis's Three Trips to Madagascar, Brown Cloth, that we have also been able to. When you come to our vitrine in the foundation, you see some of them. The Stark Munro Letters by A. Conan Doyle, and you know Conan Doyle is the one who wrote the Sherlock Holmes stories. But for him, the Sherlock Holmes stories were not important. They made him famous, but he had other concerns. Property of the City of the Dublin Public Library on 06 Cable Street, lent 21st May, which is 1904, due 4 June 1904, 3 days overdue, black cloth binding, bearing white letters on the ticket. So this is a book from the library, and we've heard several times Bloom knows it's overdue, but he hasn't yet returned it. We have it, but it's some letters, and I don't quite know what the gist of it is. Interestingly enough, when in, I would say about 1890, there was a symposium in Dublin and the city walk, and we walked past the public library, which is no longer there. Some people went up and looked at the catalogue and found before this book that it says missing since 1916. So it is quite possible that Joyce himself had borrowed it and never returned it. Then Voyages in China by Viator, recovered in France. That is potentially traceable. If anyone finds this, we would be glad to have it. It is, of course, a travel story. Then Philosophy of the Talmud. There must be many similar books. Lockhart's Life of Napoleon, cover wanted, marginal annotations, minimizing victories, ironizing defeats of the protagonist. Obviously, some English person has bought this and marked the defeats of Napoleon. This is quite a substantial book, and this is in the foundation. The next book is in a way the most interesting one, and I wonder who has some knowledge of it. Soll und Haben by Gustav Freytag, Blackboards, Gothic Characters, Sigurd Coupon Bookmark at page 24. I wonder if anyone knows it. That was a bestseller in the 19th century. And I remember when I was a student, I found this in every second-hand bookshop in Zurich. The bestseller, what is odd about it, it is crassly and bluntly anti-Semitic. It tells the story of a young commercial, a German, and it's counterpointed by an ugly criminal Jew. So it is really as anti-Semitic. And you may wonder, why is that in Broome, in German, which Broome cannot read? We know that his father knew German. So maybe he wanted to have, in a way, the enemy's book. I once had a visitor from Germany long ago, and he said, but we could never trace it, that some acclimatized Jews had this book in their library, probably to study the enemy or something like that. But there's still something to be found out about that. Then Hoser's History of the Russia-Turkish War, brown cloth, two volumes, with gum-laden Garrison Library, Governor's Trade, Gibraltar, Mercer. That is something, a book that is obviously from the governor's life, that must have been a book that his father, his father-in-law, Morris's father, did not return because he was interested in battles. Then Lawrence Broomfield in Ireland, William Allegheny, second edition, with Rothkill, Tuffle Design, previous owner's name on Blackstone Library, erased. Handbook of Astronomy, again, that is not traceable. Cover, brown leather, detached, four plates, antique letterpress, long primer, author's footnotes, nonpareil, marginal, brevier, caption, small pica. Primer, nonpareil, brevier, and pica are typographic sizes, the size of the various types, getting smaller and smaller. The Hidden Life of Christ, that would be interesting to have, because in the 19th century, biblical criticism was just beginning to find out what the stories were and how they depended on each other. In the Track of the Sun is the book that Broome has in his library and mentions it, and we have it too, yellow cloth, title page missing, recurrent tale, title Intestation. Then, Physical Strength and How to Obtain It by Eugene Sandow, red cloth. I'm happy to say we have this one, though it's falling apart. Because Eugene Sandow, a German, he was the first Schwarzenegger, a bodybuilder. He was very strong, and he appeared in cyclists and lifted weights and things like that. And he was good at marketing himself, and he set up a firm where you wrote the book, How You Can Develop Muscles by Push-Ups. We have that. And we also have in the foundation dumbbells to strengthen your finger muscles. So we can open a fitness studio. So he was quite an important thing, and Joyce was interested in that kind of thing, and what is called cultural And you might, in the internet, you will find a lot about Eugen Sandow. Even a film is possible to see. So that was contemporary physical thing. Of course, Broom didn't do that for very long. Then the last one seems to be an old book that, for some reason, Broom found or got. Short yet Plain Elements of Geometry, written in French by Father Ignatius Pardies and rendered into English. And you see, it has that old-fashioned long S that looks like an F. That was current once in the thing. And of course, you also know it from the German SZ, a similar kind of thing. English by John Harris, D.D. London, printed for El Knapbock in Bishop's Hotel, then the Roman number, with dedicated epistle to his worthy friend George Cox, Esquire, Member of Parliament for the Burgh of Suffolk, and having a calligraphed statement of the flyleaf certifying that the book was the property of Michael Gower, dated this 10th day of May 1822, and requesting the person who should find it, if the book should be lost or go astray, to restore it to Michael Gallagher, Carpenter, to for him, get any scores you want to get the finest place in the world. Of course, that's totally immaterial for it, but it shows the pedantry of information. Yeah, that's the place.
What reflections occupied his mind during the process of reversion of the inverted volumes? The necessity of order, a place for everything and everything in its place, the deficient appreciation of literature possessed by females, the incongruity of an apple incuneated in a tumbler and of an umbrella inclined in a closed stool, the insecurity of hiding any secret document behind, beneath, or between the pages of a book. Which volume was the largest in bulk? Hozier's History of the Russo-Turkish War. What, among other data, did the second volume of the work in question contain? The name of a decisive battle, forgotten, frequently remembered by a decisive officer, Major Brian Cooper Tweedy, remembered. Why, firstly and secondly, did he not consult the work in question? Firstly, in order to exercise mnemotechnic. Secondly, because after an interval of amnesia, when seated at the central table about to consult the work in question, he remembered by mnemotechnic the name of the military engagement, Plevna. What caused him consolation in his sitting posture? The candor, nudity, pose, tranquility, youth, grace, sex, counsel of a statue erect in the center of the table, an image of Narcissus purchased by auction from P.A. Wren, 9 Bachelor's Walk. What caused him irritation in his sitting posture? Inhibitory pressure of collar, size 17, and waistcoat, 5 buttons. Two articles of clothing superfluous in the costume of mature males and inelastic to alterations of mass by expansion. How was the irritation allayed? He removed his collar with contained black necktie and collapsible stud from his neck to a position on the left of the table. He unbuttoned successively in reverse direction waistcoat, trousers, shirt, and vest along the medial line of irregular increspated black hair extending in triangular convergence from the pelvic basin over the circumference of the abdomen and umbilicular fossicle along the medial line of nodes to the intersection of the 6th pectoral vertebrae, thence produced both ways at right angles and terminating in circles described about 2 equidistant points, right and left, on the summits of the mammary prominences. He unbraced successively each of 6-1 braced trouser buttons arranged in pairs, of which one incomplete.
So, what reflections occupied his mind during the process of reversion of the inverted volume? Obviously, he puts them back in the right or upside down. The necessity of order, a place for everything and everything in its place. The deficient appreciation of literature possessed by females. Molly doesn't. She reads some books, of course, but not. And Joyce's own Nora didn't read a lot. She didn't, it seems she never read Ulysses. as it said. The incongruity of an apple incunate in a tumbler and of an umbrella inclined in a closed room. It is not good to have an apple incunate that has been partly eaten, and you shouldn't hide anything beneath the page in the book. It's not a good hiding place. Which volume was the largest in bulk? Hozier's History of the Russia-Turkish War. And that is, in fact, a large book. What, among other data, did the second volume of the work in question contain? The name of a decisive battle, forgotten, frequently remembered by a decisive officer, Major Brian Cooper Tweedy, remembered. And when Bloom first thought of his father-in-law, and as in the Penguin edition on page 67, I'll just read it here. When Bloom thinks about the bed that's from Gibraltar, he thinks, Tweedy, Tweedy, yes, sir, a Plevna there was, I rose from the ranks. He obviously overheard his father-in-law talking about the Battle of Plevna. Now, one might think that he was at the Battle of Plevna, but he couldn't have been because the Battle of Plevna did not have any British troops, but he was probably somebody enough, an army person, interested in battles, and he read the books and even didn't return it to the garrison library. Why, firstly and secondly, did he not consult the work in question? He could have looked it up in the book. Firstly, in order to exercise mnemotechnic, your technique of remembering. Secondly, because after an interval of amnesia, when seated at the central table, about to consult the work in question, he remembered by mnemotechnic the name of the military engagement, Plevna. So, for a moment, Bloom cannot remember it, and he called it amnesia. Now, if you don't know, not remember something or some name occasionally, which I would guess happens to all of us, that is not yet amnesia. And when suddenly you remember, that is not mnemotechnic. Mnemotechnic is a system developed how you can remember things. It's quite complicated. So you see these terms are again exaggerated. What caused him consolation in his sitting posture? The candor, nudity, pose, tranquility, youth, grace, sex, counsel of a statue erect in the center of the table, an image of Narcissus, purchased by an auction from P.A. Wren, 9 Bachelor's Walk. So there is a statue of Narcissus, you know, the man who was in love with himself. It was got at an auction. There's a kind of classical decor. What is interesting or strange, I understand pose, and there is, I don't understand counsel. What kind of advice, counsel, would you get from a statue? What caused the irritation in his sitting posture? Inhibitory pressure of collar, size 17, and waistcoat, 5 buttons, 2 articles of clothing superfluous in the costume of mature males, and inelastic alterations of mass by expansion. So you see, that was a warm day, and you see what they had to wear, a collar, tight collar, a waistcoat, and that you don't need and would be very impractical and elastic. And don't forget, they had no showers after all of that. How was the irritation allayed? He removed his collar. Now we have a detailed description of his this shedding off his clothes, he removed his collar, which contained black dionysus and collateral stud. Obviously, the whole arrangement, collar with the stud, is one thing. And with a necktie that you could change from his neck to a position on the left of the table. He unbuttoned successively in reversed direction, waistcoat, trousers, shirt, and vest. So he has a waistcoat and a vest. Must have been a little bit uncomfortable. Along the medial line of irregular, incrispated black hair, that is, hair on the chest, black hair extending in triangular convergence from the pelvic basin over the circumference of the abdomen and umbilical fossicle, the navel, or the fossicle, along the medial line of nodes to the intersection of the six pectoral vertebrae. Lengths produced both ways, right out and terminating circular scribe about two equidistant points right and left of the summits of the mammary prominence, this kind of indication of breasts that men have. He unbraced successively each of six minus one braced trouser buttons arranged in pairs, of which one incomplete. Why incomplete? In the surcy. At one moment, he lost one of his trouser buttons, went bip. Everyone who's been in the Swiss Army knows probably the discomfort when you lose a button and have to sew it on. Now, we go on, yeah.
What involuntary actions followed? He compressed between two fingers the flesh circumjacent to a cicatrice in the left infracostal region below the diaphragm, resulting from a sting inflicted 2 weeks and 3 days previously, 23rd of May, 1904, by a bee. He scratched imprecisely with his right hand, though insensible of prurition, various points and surfaces of his partly exposed, wholly abluted skin. He inserted his left hand into the left lower pocket of his waistcoat and extracted and replaced a silver coin, 1 shilling, placed there presumably on the occasion, 17th of October 1903, of the interment of Mrs. Emily Sinico, Sydney Parade. Compiled the budget for 16th of June 1904. Debit, 1 pork kidney, 3 pence. 1 copy Freeman's Journal, 1 penny. 1 bath and ratification, 1 and 6 pence. Tram fare, 1 penny. 1 in memoriam, Patrick Dignam, 5 shillings. 2 Banbury cakes, 1 penny. 1 lunch, 7 pence. 1 renewal fee for book, 1 shilling. 1 packet notepaper and envelopes, 2 pence. 1 dinner and gratification, 2 shillings. 1 postal order and stamp, 2 and 8 pence. Tram fare, 1 penny. 1 pig's foot, 4 pence. 1 sheep's trotter, 3 pence. 1 cake, fries, plain chocolate, 1 penny. 1 square soda bread, 4 pence. 1 coffee and bun, 4 pence. Loan, Stephen Dedalus, refunded, £1.07. Balance, 17 shillings and 5 pence. £2.19 and 3. Credit, cash in hand, 4 and 9 pence. Commission received, Freeman's Journal, £1.07 and 6 pence. Loan, Stephen Dedalus, £1.07. £2.19 and 3.
Oh.
Did the process of divestiture continue?
Good. So, what involuntary action followed? Of course, undressing isn't always conscious. He compressed between two fingers, circumjacent to a cicatrice in the left infracostal region below the diaphragm, resulting from a sting inflicted 2 weeks and 3 days previously, 23rd May 1904, by a bee. We know that Bloom has been stung by a bee in the garden and he ran to the hospital, and of course the bee sting, there's still a mark there, a cicatrice. That, by the way, would be something to recognize somebody. Not everybody, I don't think few of us right now, have that kind of thing for visiting at the same place. And that would correspond to Odysseus, who could be recognized by a scar in his thigh that he acquired long ago, and which, when she's washing him, his old nurse recognizes. It's a very poignant scene in the Odyssey, but here it's not used for identification. By the way, I always regret that in, or maybe in 2 years, that on the 23rd of May, we did not give a toast to the bee that stung Broom. It's perhaps one of the better known literary bees. He scratched imprecisely with his right hand, though insensible, purition, itch, various points and surfaces of his partly exposed, wholly abluted skin. Why abluted? In the morning, he went to a public bath. But the word ablut doesn't just mean washed. It is a religious kind of thing, ablution, before a sacrifice. He inserted his left hand into the left lower pocket of his waistcoat and extracted and replaced a silver coin, one shilling, placed there, presumably, on the occasion, 7th October 1993, of the interment of Mrs. Emily Sinico, Sydney Parade. So the last time he used his funeral clothes, when he went to the funeral of Mrs. Sinico. He remembered that on the cemetery. And for us, we can read about Mrs. Sinico in the Dubliner story, A Painful Case, where an elderly woman has a kind of disappointment and then she dies in a train accident. And we don't quite know it was a suicide, or not. And Broom obviously knew her and went to her funeral, finding out some money. Sydney Parade is in a suburb of Dublin. And this piece of money that he discovered results in, he probably thinks, how much money have I spent? I do not think that he sits down and writes down a budget. But it is, if he did, that is what it would amount to. And so we have here, you might say, a recapitulation of the day in terms of money. Debit. Compile the budget for 16 June 1904. Now, you know, that's already not accurate, but some events took place already on the 17th, somewhat halfway through. I keep reminding us that the accuracy, the scientific precision, is sometimes spurious. So, but now here we can go through the book. He bought the pork kidney for 3 shillings. He bought a copy of the Freeman Journal, costing 1 penny. Newspaper prices and tram fares have gone up a bit. Bath and gratification, 1 and 6. Tram fare, 1 penny. You could go quite a bit for 1 penny. In memoriam, Patrick Dignam, 5 shillings, and Broom rather generously put down 5 shillings. He gave Banbury cakes to the Gulls. He paid for his lunch of a glass of Burgundy and Gorgonzola sandwich. He paid seven pennies. And then you can see that his contribution to the Dignam Fund of 5 shillings was quite substantial. Renewal for the book, Treat of Sin, don't you? Packet, no paper envelope. She bought stationery to write to Martha Clifford. dinner and gratification in the Ormond Hotel. You could see you could get some kidneys and things like that and a glass of cider for 2 shillings. Dinner and gratification. Postlord and stamp he bought, another tram fare. Then late at night he bought a pig's foot and a sheep's trotter when he entered the night town. And then he must have bought chocolate and some soda bread. And in the last chapter in the Carmen's shelter, he paid £4 for some bad coffee. And then now he returns the money that he took from Stephen so he wouldn't spend it, and that he returned to it. So that adds up to things. And the credit is cash in hand. He still has some money. Commission, he obviously got his pay for the half month, and the loan he gave back. So, and this is true. Now, the budget isn't quite accurate. There are a few items that he took in the brothel area that are not quite there. And so some people have tried, editors, to set it right. Yeah, and then it says, that is all Bloom thinks, not, I will emphasize, not in the detail that we have here, probably recollects more or less what he spent. At the same time, he then, he's taking off his clothes. Did the process of divestiture continue? Now, divestiture is something that you rather use for ecclesiastical things, priest's vestment. But of course, it also means taking off. So, so when you want to impress somebody and retire from a party, you can say, I'm going to face my divestiture. And that sounds pretty elegant. Yeah, then we go on.
Did the process of divestiture continue? Sensible of a bidding and persistent ache in his foot soles, he extended his foot to one side and observed the creases, protuberances, and salient points caused by foot pressure in the course of walking repeatedly in several different directions. Then inclined, he disnoded the lace knots, unhooked and loosened the laces, took off each of his 2 boots for the second time, detached the partially moistened right sock, through the forepart of which the nail of his great toe had again effracted, raised his right foot, and having unhooked a purple elastic sock suspender, took off his right sock, placed his unclothed right foot on the margin of the seat of his chair, picked at and gently lacerated the protruding part of the great toenail, raised the part lacerated to his nostrils, and inhaled the odor of the quick, then with satisfaction threw away the lacerated unguical fragment. Why with satisfaction? Because the odor inhaled corresponded to other odors inhaled of other unguical fragments, picked and lacerated by Master Bloom, pupil of Mrs. Ellis Juvenile School, patiently each night in the act of brief genuflection and nocturnal prayer and ambitious meditation.
I think we stop here because something is coming here. Good. Sensible of a benignant persistent ache in his foot soles, obviously he's walked a lot, he extended his foot to one side and observed the creases, protuberance and salient points caused by foot pressure in the course of walking repeatedly in several different directions. Have you thought how useful this information is? You walk in several different directions, which most of us do. Otherwise, we couldn't get home. Otherwise, we would walk in a straight line. So this kind of pedantry is, of course, partly unnecessary. Then, inclined, he disnoded his lace knots and hooked and looped the laces, took off each of his 2 boots for the second time. He did this before when he took his bath. Detached the partially moistened right sock through the forepart of which the nail of his great toe had again effracted. So the nail went through the sock. Raised his right foot and having unhooked the purple elastic sock suspender. I wonder if any major remember sock suspenders. I do because I had to wear them on my confirmation. That's the only thing I remember about the damn confirmation. Took off his right sock, placed his unclothed right foot on the margin of the seat. You see, all of these things you're unaware of, how you sit and what you do. Picked at and gently lacerated the protruding part of his grey toenail, tearing, raised in part the part lacerated to his nostril, and inhaled the odour of the quick, then with satisfaction threw away the lacerated umbilical fragment. So he smells his toenail. Why with satisfaction? Because the inhaled odour, the odour inhaled, corresponded to other odours inhaled into other umbilical fragments picked and lacerated by Master Bloom, the young Bloom, pupil of Mr. Ellis's juvenile school, patiently each night in the act of brief genuflection and nocturnal prayer and ambitious meditation. So remember, he had done that at school, and it was obviously the school where the boys had to go, had to pray before and then smell this. This is the kind of, or one of several Proustian moments when a smell brings back memories. Now we come to a long extended passage of what Bloom would like as his home.
In what ultimate ambition had all concurrent and consecutive ambitions now coalesced? Not to inherit by right of primogeniture, Gavelkind or Borough English, or possess in perpetuity an extensive domain of sufficient number of acres, roods and perches, statute land measure, valuation of Grays and Turbury, surrounding a baronial hall with gate lodge and carriage drive, nor, on the other hand, a terrace house or semi-detached villa, described as Russin Orbe or Quisi Sana, but to purchase by private treaty in fee simple a thatched bungalow-shaped two-story dwelling house of southerly aspect, surmounted by vane and lightning conductor, connected with the earth, with porch covered by parasitic plant, ivy or Virginia creeper, hall door, olive green with smart carriage finish, and neat door brasses, stucco front with gilt tracery at eaves and gable rising, if possible, upon a gentle eminence with agreeable prospect from balcony, with stone pillar parapet over unoccupied and unoccupiable interjacent pastures, and standing in 5 or 6 acres of its own ground, at such a distance from the nearest public thoroughfare as to render its house lights visible at night above and through a quick-set hornbeam hedge of topiary cutting, situate at a given point not less than 1 statute mile, from the periphery of the metropolis, within a time limit of not more than 5 minutes from tram or train line, e.g. Dum Dum South or Sutton North, both localities equally reported by trial to resemble the terrestrial poles in being favourable climates for bicycle subjects. The premises to be held under fee farm grant, lease 999 years, the message to consist of 1 drawing room with bay window, 2 lancets, thermometer affixed, 1 sitting room, 4 bedrooms, 2 servants' rooms, tiled kitchen with clothes range and scullery, lounge hall fitted with linen, wall presses, fumed oak sectional bookcase containing the Encyclopedia Britannica and New Century Dictionary, transverse obsolete medieval and oriental weapons, dinner gong, alabaster lamp, bowl pendant, vulcanite automatic telephone receiver with adjacent directory, hand-tufted Axminster carpet with cream-grounded trellis border, loo table with pillar and claw legs, hearth with massive fire brasses and all-millo mantel chronometer clock, guaranteed timekeeper with cathedral chime, barometer with hygrographic chart, comfortable lounge settees and corner fitting, upholstered in ruby plush with good springing and sunk centre, 3-banner Japanese screen and cuspidors, club-style, rich wine-coloured leather, gloss renewable with a minimum of labour by use of linseed oil and vinegar, and pyramidically prismatic central chandelier lustre, bentwood perch with a finger-tamed parrot, expurgated language, embossed mural paper at 10 shillings per dozen with transverse swags of carmine floral design and top crown frieze, staircase, 3 continuous flights at successive right angles of varnished clear-grained oak, treads and risers, newel, balusters and handrail, with stepped-up panelled dado, dressed with camphorated wax, bathroom, hot and cold supply, reclining and shower, water closet on mezzanine provided with opaque single-pane oblong window, seat, bracket lamp, the brass-tiered brace, armrests, footstool, an artistic oleograph on inner face of door, ditto plane, servants' apartments with separate sanitary and hygienic necessities, general, and between salary rising by any unearned increments of £2, with comprehensive fidelity insurance, annual bonus £1, and retiring allowance based on the 65 system after 30-year service. Pantry, buttery, larder, refrigerator, out offices, coal and wood cellarage with wine bin, still and sparkling vintages for distinguished guests if entertained to dinner, evening dress. Carbon monoxide gas supply throughout.
Yeah. So it's quite a mouthful. Hmm? So Bloom's ideal home, and you can in what ultimate ambition had all concurrent and ambitions now coalesced. And again, I think that Bloom does not think of this in all these details, but not to inherit by right of primogeniture. Primogeniture is that the firstborn son gets everything. And you know, in the Old Testament, that's an important issue. Our kind is some kind of possession in Old English or Borrow English, or possessing perpetual and extensive domain of a certain number of acres, roots, and purchase, title damage and valuation 42, each house had a valuation, and that's very high, of grazing turbary surrounding a baronian hall with gate lodge and carriage drive, so this is not what he wants, nor, on the other hand, a terrace house or semi-detached villa described as Rus in urbe, country in town, qui si sono. I remember in Zurich I've seen some qui si sono in health. But to purchase by private treaty in fee simple. Now, I don't know the technicalities of house owning. A fee simple, a thatched bungalow shaped two-story dwelling house of southerly aspect, looking out to the circle, surmounted by rain, a weather vane, and lightning conductor, connected with the earth, with porch covered by parasitic plants, ivy or Virginia creeper, and neat door brasses, houses have brasses, knockers and handles. Stucco front with gilt tracery of eaves and gable, the outside of the house, rising if possible, upon a gentle eminence with agreeable prospect from balcony with stone pillar parapet over unoccupied and unoccupiable interjacent pastures. So you would have house that looked out, and of course, no other building to block the site. Ideal. And standing at 5 or 6 acres of its own ground. I don't quite know what 5 or 6 acres are, but you could probably convert this. Would be quite something. As such a distance from the nearest public thoroughfare as to render its house light visible at night, so you could see the city above and through a quick set hornbeam hedge of topiary cutting. Topiary is you cut the bushes in nice squares or spheres and things like that. Situate at a given point, not less than 1 study mile from the periphery of the metropolis, within a time limit of not more than 5 minutes from tram or train line, so it's ideal access to traffic, Dundrum South or Sutton North. These will be fashionable suburbs. Both locales equally reported by trial to resemble the terrestrial poles in being favorable climates. So those places have a somewhat better climate, a bit more sun than others. In being a Fabelclan for statistical subject, the premises to be held on the fee farm grant. Again, that's a technically the premises to be held on the fee farm lease 990 years. There were some very long leases. So that means the price wouldn't raise in that time. The necessary duty to consist of one drawing room with bay window, two lancets, thermometer affixed, one modern, bay window, one sitting room, four bedrooms, two servants' rooms, tiled kitchen with close range and scullery, lounge hall fitted with linen wall presses are cupboards, and fumed oak sectional bookcase containing the Encyclopaedia Britannica and the New Century Dictionary, transverse absolute medieval and oriental weapons, you have swords and rifles and things like that, dinner gong, alabaster lamp, bowl pendant, vulcanite automatic telephone receiver, that is posh, but of course a telephone, with adjacent directory, hand-tufted Axminster carpet, that must be good quality, with cream ground and trellis border, loo table, that's a little table for a game loo, with pillar and claw legs, hearth with massive fire brasses and ormolu, mantled chronometer clock, guaranteed timetable with cathedral chime, that's probably Westminster, barometer with hygrographic chart, comfortable lounge settees and corner fittings, upholstered in ruby plush with good springing and sunk center, three banner Japanese screen and cuspidors, that is, you spit into them. Club style, rich wine colored leather, gloss renewal with a minimum label by usual linseed oil and vinegar, and pyramidically prismatic central chandelier luster, bent with perch with a fingertip parrot, language, embossed mural paper at 10 per dozen with transverse spikes of carmel floral design. That would be the wallpaper, and top crown trees, staircase, three continuous flights at successive right angles of varnished clear-grained oak, treads and risers, new world balusters. These are all the parts of extension. Boston handrail with stepped up panel dado, I forget what that is, dressed with camphorate wax, bathroom hot and cold supply, reclining and shower. You could both lie down and you could take a shower. This must be something that very few upper class people had. Water closet on mezzanine provided with opaque single pane oblong window, tip up seat, bracket lamp, brass steel brace, armrest, footstool, artistic autograph on inner face of door, ditto plane, servants' apartments with separate sanitary and hygiene, necessary for cook, general, and between maid, salary. And now Bloom would be a very social employer. He would benefit for them, and that would have been something extremely utopian at the time. Between a salary rising by biennial unearned increments of £2 with comprehensive fidelity insurance annual bonus, you would care about the insurance and retire allowance based on the 65 system, some kind of old age pension system, of the 30-year service, pantry, butter, larder, refrigerator, out office, coal and wood cutlery with wine bin, still and sparkling vintages, sparkling champagne and so on, for distinguished guests, if entertained, to dinner, evening dressed, carbon monoxide gas supply throughout. And that was the latest in gas kitchen. So you see, Bloom is imagining something quite fancy, totally, of course, outside of his range.
What additional attractions might the grounds contain? As a dender, a tennis and fives court, a shrubbery, a glass summer house with tropical palms, equipped in the best botanical manner, a rockery with water spray, a beehive arranged on humane principles, oval flower beds in rectangular grass plots, set with eccentric ellipses of scarlet and chrome tulips, blue scillas, crocuses, polyanthus, sweet William, sweet pea, lily of the valley, bulbs obtainable from Sir James W. Mackey Limited, wholesale and retail, seed and bulb merchant and nurseryman, agent for chemical manures, 23 Sackville Street Upper, an orchard, kitchen garden and vinery, protected against illegal trespassers by glass-topped mural enclosures, a lumber shed with padlock for various inventoried implements, as eel traps, lobster pots, fishing rods, hatchet, steelyard, rhinestone, clod crusher, swathe turner, carriage sack, telescope ladder, ten-tooth rake, washing clogs, hay tedder, tumbling rake, billhook, paint pot, brush, hoe, and so on. What improvements might be subsequently introduced? A rabbitry and fowl run, a dovecote, a botanical conservatory, two hammocks, ladies and gentlemen, a sundial shaded and sheltered by laburnum or lilac trees, an exotically harmonically accorded Japanese tinkle gate bell affixed to left lateral gatepost, a capacious water butt, a lawnmower with side delivery and grass box, a lawn sprinkler with hydraulic hose. What facilities of transit were desirable? When city-bound, frequent connection by train or tram from the respective intermediate station or terminal. When country-bound, velocipedes, a chainless freewheel roadster cycle with side basket car attached, or draft conveyance, a donkey with wicker trap, or smart phaeton with good working solid angular cob, roan gelding 14 hands. What might be the name of this erigible or erected residence? Bloom Cottage, St. Leopold's, Flowerville. Could Bloom of 7 Acre Street foresee Bloom of Flowerville? In loose all-wool garments with Harris tweed cap, price 8 and 6 pence, and useful garden boots with elastic gussets, and watering can, planting aligned young fir trees. Syringing, pruning, staking, sowing hayseed, trundling a weed-laden wheelbarrow without excessive fatigue at sunset amid the scent of new-mown hay, ameliorating the soil, multiplying wisdom, achieving longevity.
Yeah, what? I think that's good enough for the moment. Mm-hmm. No end to the things you could add to it. What additional attractions might the grounds contain? As a dender, a tennis and fives court. Fives is when you play against the ball, a wall. A shrubbery, a glass summer house with tropical palms, equipped in the best botanical manner. A rockery with water spray. A beehive arranged on humane principles. I like to be here on a humane principle because the bees know damn well how to organize something much better than the humans. oval flower beds in rectangular grass pots set with eccentric ellipses of scarlet and chrome tulips, blue scillus flowers, crocuses, polyanthus, sweet William. Sweet William is a flower. Before that, in the library chapter, Sweet William meant Shakespeare. And here the same phrase is a flower. Sweet pea, lily of the valley. Bulbs attainable, now where can you get them? From Sir James Mackey Limited, wholesale and retail, seeds and bulb merchant and nursery, and agent for chemical manures, 23 Sackville Street, Upper. An orchard, kitchen garden and winery, protect against illegal trespassers by glass-topped mural enclosures. So you see, there would be a wall with glass topped. So ironically, if Bloom had this kind of home, he couldn't have entered as he did his apartment. A lumber shed with padlock for various uninvented implements. And these are then enumerated. Eel traps, lobster pots, fishing rods, hatchet, steel yard, grindstone, clawed crusher. These must be agricultural things. Swathe turner, carriage sack, telescope ladder, a 10-tooth rake, washing clogs, hay tedder. I suppose these are all like agricultural things. It's sometimes quite interesting to look it up in old catalogues of the turn of the century. These are quite good sources of information. Tumbling rake, billhook, paint pot, brush, hoe, and so on. Not enough. What improvements might be subsequently introduced? Rabbitry and fowl run, a dovecote, a botanical conservatory, two hammocks, ladies and gentlemen, a sundial shaded and sheltered by laburnum or lilac trees, an exotically harmonically accorded Japanese tinkle gate bell affixed to the lateral gatepost, a capacious water hut, a lawn mower with side delivery and glass box, a lawn sprinkler with hydraulic hose. So this would be probably the best obtainable tools and all of that. What facilities of transit were desirable? When city-bound, frequent connection by train or tram from their respective intermediate station or terminal. When country-bound, velocipedes, a chainless three-wheel roadster cycle. There were all kinds of, cycles with high wheels and things like that. A chainless three-wheel roadster cycle with side basket car attached, or draft conveyance, a donkey with a wicker trap, or smart phaeton. There must be a vehicle of some sort with good working solid angular corb. Rome gelding, that would be a horse. What might be the name of this erigible that could be erected or erected residence? It would be called, as such places were called, Bloom Cottage, St. Leopold's, Flowerville. Could Bloom of Seven Eccles Street foresee Bloom of Flowerville? Imagine himself in loose old wool garments with Harris tweed cap, price 8 and 6, and used the garden boots with electric gussets and watering can, planting aligned young fig trees, syringing, pure pruning, staking, sowing hayseed, trundling a wheelbarrow-laden wheelbarrow without excessive fatigue. At sunset, amid the scent of new mown hay, ameliorating the soil, multiplying wisdom, achieving longevity. So that is all the Roman ideal, where the senators would retire to the country and enjoy that thing. So that has a long tradition behind it, of course. But,
longevity. What syllabus of intellectual pursuits was simultaneously possible? Snapshot photography, comparative study of religions, folklore relative to various amatory and superstitious practices, contemplation of the celestial constellations. What lighter recreations? Outdoor, garden and fieldwork, cycling on level macadamized causeways, ascents of moderately high hills, Natation in secluded fresh water and unmolested river boating in secure wherry or light curricle with kedge anchor on reaches free from weirs and rapids. Period of estivation. Vespertinal perambulation or equestrian circumprocession with inspection of sterile landscape and contrasting agreeable cottages fires of smoking peat turbs. Period of hibernation. Indoor discussion in tepid security of unsolved historical and criminal problems. Lecture of unexpurgated exotic erotic masterpieces. House carpentry with toolbox containing hammer, awl, nails, screws, tin tacks, gimlet, tweezers, bullnose plane and turn screw. Might he become a gentleman farmer?
Oh, I think we stop here, yeah. Syllabus of intellectual pursuits was simultaneously possible. Snapshot photography. That was something coming that you could take snapshots, but it wasn't much developed. Comparative study of religious folklore relative to various amateur and superstitious practices. Such a thing were just studied by anthropologists in the various cultures. It's also the age of the golden bough, a kind of collection of rituals and customs and all of this. Relative to various amatory and superstitious practices, of course, they would all also mention erotic customs. Contemplation of celestial constellation, looking at the sky. What lighter recreations? Outdoor, garden and fieldwork, cycling on level macadamized causeways. Macadamized is the what streets are covered with macadam causeways. So a level, so it all would be agreeable, not too stressful. Level hills. Natation in secluded fresh water and unmolested river boating in secure wherry or light curricle with kedge anchor, so you could move along canals, on the reaches free from weirs and rapids, period of estivation. Estivation is in the summer. And then you have these abstract Latin-derived things I already mentioned. Vespertinal perambulation. Try to translate that into German. You could say vespertinale perambulationen, but that is a bit strange. Meaning, obviously, evening walks and coming back. Or equestrian circumprocession. That is, on a horse you would ride round and come back. With inspection of sterile landscape and contrastingly agreeable cottages, fires of smoking peat turfs. In the Irish countryside, they were using turf of peat for heating. Period of hibernation, that is, in the wintertime. Indoor discussion in tepid security of unsolved historical and criminal problems. There are all kinds of problems you could read. Lecture of unexpurgated erotic masterpieces. You couldn't get them so easily, but there were some expensive prints of erotic things, like a famous translation of all of the Thousand and One Nights by Robert Burton, things like that. House carpentry with toolbox containing hammer, awl, nails, screws, tin tacks, gimlets, tweezers, bullnose plane, and turn screw. I just do the next one. Might he become a gentleman farmer and feed produce and livestock? That is, of course, an idea, to become a gentleman farmer. That's not somebody who goes out and ploughs. Somebody who owns things, and his servants do that. Not impossibly with one or two stripper cows. I don't know what stripper cows are, but of course, for peasants, cows are not just cows. You distinguish them. One pike of upland hay and requisite farming implements, for example, an end-to-end churn, I think for butter, a turnip pulper, etc. What would be his civic function and social status among the country families and landed gentry? That's an aspiration. Arranged successively in ascending or powers of hierarchy, the order, that of gardener, groundsman, cultivator, breeder, and at the zenith, top of his career, resident magistrate or justice of the peace. Now, when you read novels about England in the 20th century, you always have a justice of the peace who is, in a way, the most powerful person around. So, yeah, that you find in countless English novels. With a family crest, you would, of course, have that, and coat of arms, and appropriate classical motto, Semper Paratus. That is, of course, the Boy Scouts, outside the right. Duly recorded in the court directory. And this is what they would write about the nobility, like Bloom. Bloom, Leopold P., MP, Members of Parliament, PC, Privy Council, KP, Knight of St. Patrick, LLD, a Doctor of Literature, Honoris Causa, Bloomville, Dundrum. That's a good lesson. And then how he would be reported in the paper, Mr. and Mrs. Leopold Bloom have left Kingstown for England. And upper class people, nobility, travel, that is always reported in the paper. Yeah, and that's a good place to stop then. Thank you, Dan, and next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a nice evening.